Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Please welcome the manager, number 30, Craig Council.
I know it's official that I'm a Cub now and I'm talking to Danny Parkins. You know what I mean?
Craig Council.
My thought on Craig, as I've always watched him against us, was the Bum Phillips quote where he said, he'd take his and beat yours and yours and beat his. And that's kind of how I felt sometimes watching him, that he was just getting the most out of the team.
MLB veteran for 16 seasons.
Council gets into one to right. His teammates call him Rudy, and Rudy has just tied game one of the 2001 World Series with a first inning home run.
Two-time World Series champion.
So now it's Council who carries the run that could win the World Series as he leads away from third. A liner off Nagy's glove into center field. The Florida Marlins have won the World Series.
Manager for your Chicago Cubs.
Life's got a couple twists and turns ahead of you.
This was a life goal for me. Afternoons with the Score. So here we are.
That's a great story.
And my life goal is to work with Danny.
That's questionable, yeah.
Craig Council with Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Excited for our bi-monthly visit with Craig Council, and it happens right now as Craig joins us on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. It's the Parkins and Spiegel Show. Matt Spiegel and Anthony Herron are your hosts because Danny Parkins decided, Craig Council, that interviewing you was secondary to his life as his best friend is getting married today in Kansas City. Can you believe that, Craig?
Yeah, I know where I stand.
It's good to learn that, don't you think?
I mean, as you're building new relationships, very important to learn that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, take that to heart and just know that we care more. Speaks and Anthony Harris care more. Do you have the news on what pitcher you're adding? Has Jose Quas got option this morning? Could you tell us that?
We're going to add Keegan Thompson. Yes.
Wow, that's very interesting. Yeah,
very cool.
Keegan was a great Cub for a while, yeah. And then struggled and went down. But that's a bulk guy, theoretically. I think he's been going two innings in every one of his minor league starts. Is that right, Craig?
In his appearances, he's been pitching out of the bullpen. Yeah, and I think see Keegan as multiple innings, certainly. And look, we just, you know, it's going to take, every year, I think bullpens and kind of figuring out what's going on with them is a little bit of a process to find out. And unfortunately, Jose struggled to start the season. And so, you know, Keegan gets an opportunity.
Have been wondering about your philosophy on that. So it'll be interesting. If the bullpen mix had been different with more guys who could go multiple innings, would you be inclined to use people that way as a philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're just putting your guys in position to be successful. So certainly multiple innings is on the table with the right pitchers. Absolutely.
All right. Let me ask it a different way. A long held general bullpen thought on my end. Want to get your thought on, because maybe it's too simplistic. Like when I see a lot of guys get used one inning after one, part of me thinks, all right, the more guys you use, the more chance that one of them just doesn't have it on a given day. Is that too simplistic to think about it that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of that and the hitters that they're facing. Yeah, I mean, it's hard for hitters to face a different pitcher every single at bat. We know that. We know that's more difficult than the third time through the lineup or whatever. So, but you also need pitchers that are going to get, you know, that are going to face, get 15 outs, get 18 outs, get 21 outs. And you want pitchers like that. You're trying to develop pitchers like that and find pitchers like that. So, you know, I think both things can be a little bit true. Yeah, I mean, multiple inning relievers are certainly, they're valuable for sure, but it's harder to get six outs than it is to get three outs.
Now that you're a couple of weeks into it at this point, as far as the season goes, but a lot of us were just wondering whether or not more would be added to the starting staff, to the bullpen. And now that you're having to make some maneuvers during the season here, is it fair to look at the way the roster was managed, the staff was managed as far as personnel goes coming into the year, that it was indicative of confidence in what you had available to you in your minor league system and the ability to pull up guys like Keegan?
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, like you can't, you know, and lots of clubs around the league are going through this. Like you don't replace Justin Steele with somebody of his quality. And that's, you know, that's how injuries affect you. So there's no replacing guys like that. You can add a body for sure, but he's not going to be of Justin Steele's quality. You know, that's, I think that makes sense. And I think I would argue the same for Julian Merriweather. It's tough to replace guys like that. So that's going to change like what your pitching staff looks like. You know, injuries, we have to like survive them. You know, none of ours are like really long-term right now. So guys are all coming back. So we should get some reinforcements as the weeks come here. But yeah, I mean, I think we're in a, you know, a decent spot right now, but certainly can't afford your top pitchers going down. It's going to really impact you.
Craig Counsell's here with us in Parkins and Spiegel. Spiegs and Anthony Herron. I loved the entire way that the opener worked out with Little and Brown, and also that Brown got his first appearance in Texas, and it just seemed like, just from like a makeup standpoint or some of the soft factors, it looked like he really enjoyed being able to get the bulk run and then the first start. Like, how much were you thinking about his personality or his makeup or the effect on him as a person when the way that his role is kind of played out over his first three appearances? Because it seems to have worked out really well.
Yeah, I think we've been a little fortunate there and just kind of the nature of what we needed from Ben. But I know, you know, look, your first major league experience as a pitcher is daunting. In some ways that getting it out of the way, like, in just a little easier scenario is just helpful. I believe that. And so we were able to get him, you know, it was a relief appearance where we were down. And it didn't go well, but I think he got it out of the way. And from there, he's kind of gotten onto more of a schedule, which he's accustomed to. And he's pitched super, super well. And he's been a big deal. I mean, he's, you know, when we talk about it, he's replaced Justin Steele's innings, and he's done a really darn good job with those innings. So that's been a really pleasant surprise and really helpful and important. His development the first 2 weeks has been really important.
Do you think are you looking at straight starts for him moving forward, or might you use an opener with him again?
I mean, I think we'll look at it. I think it's really uncertain. It's certain lineups, and you always kind of just look at it. But obviously, one of the things, too, is we're trying to get Ben stretched out a little more, that he just wasn't completely stretched out coming out, and we still are working on that. So, you know, those are things that we have to consider. But it makes sense just to look at it and then decide what the best is for the Cubs and what's the best for Ben.
You know, one last thing on the opener. The Rays get all the credit for it. Like in most of the strategy circles, like 2018, they did it. But I think it was you in the 2017 season with the Brewers. Do you feel a sense of innovation for the way you had to kind of shift to that strategy a bit in 2017 in terms of the opener being sort of pervasive around the game now?
Yeah, I mean, I would. I think the Rays were doing it first. But
trying to give you some credit here. Trying to give you credit here. Counts, take it.
I'm not going to take it. No. I think the Rays were doing it first. I think, you know, like just understanding different ways to use pitching and not being kind of locked into, it's 27 outs. That's what I say that. And it's your pitcher's job is to get outs. That's all we're looking for. We're looking to piece together 27 outs every single day. And I think just, thinking about it like that is the better way to think about it than starters, relievers. So I think I've always tried to think about it like that. And that means like at times doing something like Luke Little starting when there's two out of three lefties, you know, starting the game.
So it's remarkably early in the season, and Kyle Hendricks is as experienced and knowledgeable as any pitcher in the sport. This is your first season getting to work with him. You've worked against him plenty over the years. But how does the back and forth work between the two of you? Where early in the season, he's struggling, and you as his manager now are trying to help him figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's Kyle struggled his first three starts. There's no question about it. And, you know, when you look at it, it's stuff that it's not. I don't know if there's anything like brand new that we need to kind of change. When a lot of this comes down to execution, and especially for a pitcher like Kyle, you know, he is kind of required to execute at a higher level than everybody else, just with the nature of his stuff. And when it doesn't happen, you know, the results haven't been great. So we just kind of continue the conversation of one, trying to get him locked into his mechanics so that that execution level does go to the level it should be at. And then two, just kind of talk about small things regarding just patterns that we have to just be careful of getting into that we all kind of like go through with every pitcher on every start.
And because it's early in the season and it's your first season here, I mean, this is still early for you and even figuring out, just looking with your eyes in person at the pitching staff, the hitters, what makes them tick, how things operate for them when they're really functioning at a high level. Where would you say you're at in that process of just really getting to know these guys?
Yeah, it's where I'd expect to be at. I think you need to see it, right? It's one of those things where, like, if you're going to use your instincts, the best thing is to, like, be experienced with your players and see them succeed and see them fail. And as you see that, like, you understand kind of their rhythm. And so, yeah, I mean, we're 12 games in, and we're a 6-week spring training in, and I feel good about it. I'll feel better in 2 more weeks. I can't rush that. We have to experience the games together, and we have to experience the peaks and valleys together.
Who are you pleasantly, not surprised, that's the wrong word, but who are you enjoying in a way that you didn't realize you might, in terms of like the people? Cause there's some people off to great starts, but also just, I'm wondering like who's interesting, who's fun that you're getting to work with every day.
John Steinmiller is very interesting.
what are some hallmarks
he's
of this?
Fascinating.
Yeah, he's the PR guy. What are some hallmarks of the Steinmiller administration? There were donuts one day in the spring. Thought maybe that was going to be his.
No, I mean, I think, you know, the young player that I talk about is just Michael Bush has been really, really fun because I think he's handled everything so well early, you know, this is like you get traded to Chicago Cubs. You're the first baseman. You're a rookie, you know, and there's some, you know, there's some heat on you to succeed. And I think I just really appreciate his kind of level headedness and kind of his consistent approach. It really, I think, is going to it bodes well for him to have success. And so it's been fun watching an important player getting off to a good start, I think, for us that I've been really pleased with.
That's cool. You know, Christopher Morel, backhand play the other night. Thought the tag was pretty sweet on the Bellinger throw. What do you think about the progress for young Christopher at third?
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, this is measured over a long-term thing, not one play here and one play there. But, you know, I mean, Christopher's helping us win games, you know, and that can be done in several ways. And we'll just, the more we can get him over at third base, the more reps we can get him, the more confidence we can get him, the better. He had a nice series in San Diego. And so we'll build on that, and that gives him some confidence.
Was looking at the games where he gets replaced for Madrigal. Defensively, there's like 5 times that's happened, 3 at-bats for Nick, 1 pinch hit for Garrett Cooper in there, 2 games in which like the lead happened to be lost by the time the spot came up. Does hindsight ever enter your mind at those moments, or can you not allow that as a manager to even think about it?
Yeah, I mean, does hindsight ever enter? Of course it does. I mean, of course we review our decisions. I don't, in those situations, I haven't thought twice about that. You know, I think I think we're using sound strategy there. And there's another guy hitting that's got a chance to do some damage too. And we're putting a better defender in there. So you just, you got to go with that. And I think, you know, that there's been some pitching issues in those games that we're talking about for sure. that we got to probably clean up more than that.
You give me a Christopher Morel anecdote, because there was a lot of time over the offseason where there were folks just trying to figure out, how's this lineup? How's the full roster going to get pieced together? And Morel's name came up in trade talks a few times. I know this guy's too young and talented and vibrant, and he's been off to a nice start so far. So you, in early time that you're spending working with him, do you have a nice anecdote for us?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it was more my kind of opinion of Christopher, really, is just like from watching him and really it's just the way that his at bats. I mean, I think I just thought more than anything, his at bats make you feel like we have to find a place for this guy to play. It's really important. And, you know, obviously there's multiple spots. He's played multiple spots. I think, you know, in the long run, like if we can, like I've said, if we can get a good third baseman out of this Christopher can turn into a good third baseman. It opens up a lot on the team. And it gives, you know, somebody like Jed, like some flexibility to kind of roster build in the future. And I think that's important. But I think, you know, just watching Chris swing the bat from across the way, like we got to find a spot for this guy to play.
His ability to not swing at stuff outside the zone, that's got to be nice to see. It's him chasing less. Is that something that was a focus in the spring, or is he just kind of finding his way there? How did this happen? What's going on with that? Because the O swing percentage has gone down and down and down for Chris.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a trait of young players that they're gonna swing at the slider, and then, you know, the players who make the adjustments like gradually get better at not swinging at the slider. It's not I think it's not me telling Christopher, don't swing at the slider out of the zone. That's not good enough. but it just, you find ways and with the hitting coaches to just recognize what are your mistakes. And as you see that pitch over and over again, you get a little better at it. And that's what's happening right now. I think Chris just is getting a little bit better at kind of recognizing that pitch because he's seen it more and he's seeing it more. And he gets a little better at laying off it, and that puts him in better count situations to do some damage.
What can you tell us about Nico Horner at the plate that you're seeing? It's we love Nico, get a chance to talk to him weekly, but it's been a tough start offensively for him.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's nothing wrong with Nico Horner. I think if you look at some other the underlying stuff, it's actually is the same or maybe even a little better than what he was doing last year. So he's run into some tough luck as much as anything. And that, you know, there's nothing you can do about that. That's just the nature of baseball. There's a lot of that in short stretches of, you know, sample sizes in baseball. And so Nico's just got to stay where he's at and just kind of keep grinding and know the hits are going to come.
How much caution was there in the what at least as far as I could tell was a fairly immediate decision to rule Justin Steele out for all of April? Is there a level of caution that went into that just to sort of make sure he'd get right before he was back out there?
No, I mean, that's just that's how much he's going to miss. I mean, you know, he's got a strain. There's no way that we know it's a strain of a certain you know, severity that it's going to keep him out at least that long. So there's no extra caution in that. We're just trying to give you an accurate timeline, and that's as accurate as we can give you.
Hey, Craig, when you look at Julio Rodriguez on these Mariners, is that about as good of a five-tool, you know, center field athlete as there is in the game right now? There's something about those guys. It's pretty special stuff.
Yeah, I mean, he's a super exciting player for sure. And he's one of those young players that comes up and you realize he can do things in the game in every part of the game to beat you. And at a really young age, he's already gotten to like a, you know, really high level player. And so those are special players for sure. You know, we got to do our best to stop him for 3 days.
Who was it for you as a young fan of the game? Like you know, of an older generation, they had Mantle, you know. Of a slightly younger generation, they might have had Trout, you know, or Harper, and now it's Julio. It's like when I ask you for one of those guys, for you as a young fan, who comes to mind?
I mean, the guy that did the most amazing things was Bo Jackson. And he'd look at him and you'd be like, "But can I play on the same field as somebody like that does those things?" So that would be the guy that that always stuck out for me. Like, you'd see him do things on the field and you'd be like, "Oh my God."
Yeah, understandable. All right, Craig, thanks so much. Enjoy your time in Seattle. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Craig.
Craig Council, right here on 670 The Score. Interesting. I think you missed Danny.
You think so?
I don't know. Thoughts, boys? It's interesting. Oh,
yeah, sure. Send it to us. Yeah. Is that a possible... Is that a human emotion that exists?
Is it possible?
It is.
I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying yes or no.
Yeah, so instead of you saying something to make someone feel bad, you want us to say it.
All right.
That's why you're throwing it over here?
I'm saying that's what I said. Okay. So I sense he was like, wow, Danny's not here.
Okay.
This makes me sad.
Do you think your questions were too hard for him? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know.
I don't think you're
the smartest manager in baseball.
I think he was a little, just a tad.
Maybe just taken back because he's used to talking baseball with Danny.
No. I'm not saying my questions were hard. I think maybe I was, I don't know.
I just don't think Shane did a good enough job of explaining to Craig beforehand, like, look, Danny's not going to be here.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's time to make an adjustment.
It's so a hard.
We all are.
I'll point a thumb.
So help me out. Then. Is he normally like more bubbly?
Well.
He's just kind of, a little Shecky Green.
Danny told me yesterday, hey, make sure you tell Craig I'm not there. And I totally forgot to fly to Seattle last night and let Craig know in person that Danny wouldn't be here. So maybe he was just off a little bit.
When you've reached the state of total Parkinslessness, it can be uncomfortable.
Yes,
no, Craig and Danny go way back. They have a relationship.
Right.
Just, it's interesting.
So there's normally more giggles.
Maybe a couple. Right. A
little more yaha.
But we know, he said 2 weeks ago, he said that he can be tough to work with.
Right.
So maybe that qualifies just a little.
Okay.
Or maybe it was me. I don't know. I'll point a thumb. Unlike Danny, I'll point a thumb at myself. I don't just point a thumb at you, which is something that came up.
I'm confident it wasn't me. I'll say that.
That is fair. 670 The Score. It's the perfect Anthony Herron, along with me, Matt Spiegel, on a Danny Parkins list, Parkins and Spiegel for the weekend. Hey, this guy's just taken the fall for the superstar. We're going to shoot that opinion down next with Steve Stone after that on 670 The Score.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show in Chicago. It's a very, very good show.
Afternoons on The Score.
Do you think you have a gambling problem at all?
No, because I can stop gambling. I have a competition problem, a competitive problem.
Does Shohei Ohtani have a gambling problem? Not that we know about. And I got to say, Anthony Herron, as Anthony's in for Danny Parkins today on 670 The Score, that this filing from the federal government, not MLB, which would be a lot easier to question, because I think a lot of us have been assuming, well, MLB's going to soft pedal this investigation. They don't want anything to go wrong with Shohei. And I'm among the people that thought that was going to happen. But the federal criminal complaint, the 37-page one that came out against the interpreter, is unbelievably damning and specific. And I know, I don't think it goes all the way towards fully exonerating Shohei Ohtani, but you can see it from there, man. It's really close to just being able to say, yep, okay, got it. Ipe was a fiend, and what can we learn from this?
Now, gambling on what are the specifics of everything that got bet on? Are we mentioned the name Pete Rose earlier.
Yes.
Is there baseball within this anywhere?
No. Okay. Ipe Mizuhara, he gambled 19,000 bets between December 2021 and January 2024. I think it ends up being like 22 a day. That's a lot.
Right.
And he won about $142 million. He lost about $183 million, a net loss of nearly $41 million for the interpreter. And it looks like he stole about $16 million from Shohei to finance his, quote, insatiable appetite for illegal sports gambling, but nothing on baseball.
Now, for me as a novice, one thing I end up being surprised by, as much as I cover college sports, some of these college athletes who've been getting nabbed are people who are underage in certain states, but then folks know they're using their parents' apps and kind of falsifying their identification, essentially falsifying who they are while they're gambling. So I wonder if there is a way, if Shohei were somehow involved in this, then would there be some way to know that it's actually not the interpreter, it's actually him?
Well, I mean, they have the phone records from Shohei and Mizuhara's text messages. They've got tons and tons of those, and there's nothing in there about gambling. There's nothing in there about gambling. There's the text message from Mizuhara to one of the bookmakers where he says, I did, technically, I did steal from him. He says to the bookmaker, yeah. So, because the bookmaker's like, well, you're not, it's not like you're stealing from him. And he's like, well, technically,
I mean, I kind of am.
And then the other stuff you've learned in here about how the agent, Nez Bilello, they didn't have access to not only the accounts, but they often didn't have access to Shohei. They just went through Mizuhara for absolutely everything. He was basically a de facto manager for Shohei Ohtani. And constantly dealing with his agency and with others. A big failure by the agency, in my opinion.
What is Shohei's agent's name again?
Nez Bilello.
Shohei Ohtani has an agent named Nez Bilello.
Yeah, you want to hang out with them? Just so you can say the name a lot? What's up, Nez?
I don't know.
Hello, Mr. Bilello.
Yeah, I mean, that's surprising. I would not have guessed that.
Mizuhara impersonated Shohei Ohtani in conversations with bank officials. He pretended he was Shohei.
Isn't he like half his size? Just over the phone. I mean, like, he's just showing up with stilts in his pants, wearing a Dodgers jersey.
Hi, I'm Shohei.
You've probably heard of me.
Got a big bet.
The other thing, he's also not Japanese.
Okay.
So size doesn't matter there.
It doesn't?
It doesn't matter when your name is Nez Bilello. Good chance. You're not a Japanese man.
I thought you were saying the interpreter was impersonating
I was.
You.
Yeah, okay. No, I was. It's the interpreter.
Oh, I misread that.
But even so.
Semantics issue.
Doesn't really look like Shohei.
No, neither of them do.
No, not even a little bit.
Tanny warned me, don't do your Shohei Ohtani impersonation, and I won't. Don't worry about
it. That's being a good friend right there,
that's the adult
Tanny.
In the room right there. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, it's only in the workshopping stage. You don't want to roll that out just yet.
Hey, right? Don't say workshop.
It's where the elves work.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Work, sweat. All right. So with Shohei, if.
Yes, sir.
Because he's really kind of an insular personality, right?
Like, well, that's really the thing. He apparently had no knowledge of his interpreter impersonating him, taking money out of the accounts, communicating on his behalf with the agent and refusing to forward messages, denying other Ohtani advisors access to certain things. So, like, Shohei was just immediately like, yes, you please handle all of this. Thank you. I'll focus on my baseball. And
I mean,
that's
I
what
guess
he's been doing.
You know, when you're pitching and hitting, that's a lot on your plate. But I do feel like there are other hours in the day. He's got to be doing something social. He's got a dog now, right, Shane?
He does have a dog.
Noted dog guy.
He has a dog. He's got a fiance. So he's got
I didn't know that.
Did they get married? I don't know. Is that he's getting married this weekend in Kansas City? Is that where Danny is?
That must explain.
Yeah,
it.
No, but it's yeah, no. He let the interpreter run everything.
Wow.
And that if there's a lesson in here, it's be careful if you're letting your interpreter be your manager. And it's if you're an agent, check in on the interpreter, because this guy's been a grifter for a long, long time. But I think anybody's thoughts about, well, this is going deep and he's a fall guy and Shohei could really be in serious trouble. Very, very unlikely,
okay,
in my opinion, after reading that 37-page
report.
That's
a silver lining in
this. Well, I think so.
Found it.
And the more you know. Steve Stone will join us next. Talk about the White Sox and more. Let's talk pitching injuries with a man who knows the arm very, very well on the score.
Please welcome accomplished pitcher and popular broadcaster, Steve Stone.
Yes.
Steve Stone.
But I tried to convince Rick Hahn that he was injury prone, and Rick kept telling me he wasn't. And I said, well, when a guy gets hurt once or twice every year, to me at least, that's injury prone.
Cy Young Award winner.
By the way, next time you go to talk about Ozzy, call me a legend, will you please?
I always call you the legend.
Noel, don't forget. Hey.
Okay.
Now, I always address Steve Stone as the legend because that is fitting. I mean, 55 years of Major League Baseball, you get legendary status, my friend.
We'll give Ozzy that another 30, 40 years on the job.
Chicago White Sox television analyst.
Steve Stone, you said it. Before the first pitch, you felt good.
Thought this would be the one that you would tell your grandchildren about. The night they turned it around.
Got him!
and looking, strike three! And the White Sox get a 7-5 win here in Cleveland to take game two of the series.
And for Michael Kopech, who went out there with a two-inning save, what you might be seeing is a guy who has ascended to the closer role.
Hey, hey, I want to be a rock star.
Oh, I want to be a rock star.
With Parkins and Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Steve Stone joins the Parkins and Spiegel Show right now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Hello, Stoney. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, Spiegs. And how am I going to congratulate Danny Parkins on his new book if he's not here today?
You can do it. Just go ahead and we'll clip and paste. Pretend he's here. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, Danny, congratulations on your new book. Clip and paste that.
Oh, we will. We will. Yeah, no, it's cool, man. It's cool. It's all about Division III hoops, and Pipeline to the Pros is doing very well. So thank God. Thank you for him in absentia. We've got Luis Robert Jr. and Yoan Moncada news that we can share. Chris Getz said about 20 minutes ago that things are more optimistic than they thought of Moncada. They think he will be back this season after the All-Star break, and that Luis Robert Jr. is trending toward a six-week absence. So that's better news than perhaps expected for Luis Robert Jr., don't you think?
Well, it certainly is, actually, for both, because we envision the fact that Yoan probably wouldn't be back. And with Luis Robert, he means so much to this team that when he's out there, number one, you don't have to worry about anything defensively. And also, he's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark, as we saw a whole lot last year and some in the early going this year. So when they get back, things will look a whole lot better. And right now, you can't really obsess about the guys who are not here, because quite obviously, if they're not here, they can't help you. So you concentrate on the guys who are here. And these guys just have to try to go out, pick up the slack on a daily basis. But I listened to one of your interviews today, and I think it was with Curtis Granderson, when he talked about you can't think about winning 5 or 10 games in a row. The only thing you can think about is winning your game today. And when you do that and you string together a bunch of good performances where things are starting to go right for the guys, all of a sudden you find that you might have won 4 of 5 or 6 of 8. And that's how you go about digging yourself out of the hole that the Sox have already dug themselves into.
Curtis Granderson on with our midday show a little bit earlier today.
Well, and having that granular sort of look at things, that can be beneficial to the folks in the clubhouse, but then I think also can be beneficial to fans in a season like this for the White Sox, that, you know, there's no real reason to have big, broad expectations for what this season could mean. I'm wondering for you, what are your observations here early? Are there sort of inklings of hope in the performance of any individual so far?
Well, I take a look at the progress that Michael Kopech has made, because, you know, in spring training, he started out at the beginning of spring training to think he was going to be in the starting rotation, or at least given a shot to do that. And after watching him for a bit and then looking at his history, a couple of years back when I think 40 or 41 of his performances came as a reliever and only 4 came as a starter, he had a pretty good ERA. And I think we saw in Cleveland, we saw what Michael Kopech can be. And the question is, can he continue to do that on a daily basis? He said it's the first time since, well, a few years that he actually had the velocity that he wanted to have. And consequently, you saw what happened. If he got it near, nobody could touch it. I mean, he came in, and I talked with the broadcasters from the Cleveland Ball Club, and it's like when he threw the first couple of pitches, they went, wow, this is a different guy. And he felt like it. He looked like it. And that's what he can be. The question that we have to ask is, can he be that maybe 2 or 3 times out of 4 or 5 days? If he can do that, you can start thinking about the fact that he might be able to close. And I read the quotes of Pedro where he said he doesn't want to call him a closer per se, because the connotation is a 3-out save kind of guy, because there's a lot of those guys around. He feels that Kopech can pick up a few innings. We've seen it twice. He's had 2 saves. One was a 5-out save. The other was a 6-out save. So that's been really encouraging to me. And watching him go out there, the look that he has, I think if he can continue to do that, the Sox might find themselves with a guy that has a whole lot more value than they thought he might have had when spring training started.
Thinking back to when he was just an up-and-coming prospect and Michael Kopech was throwing triple digits and it was really exciting, and then he got here and part of the immediate sort of approach was maybe back off of that a little bit. You don't need to hit 101 and 102. Now we've dealt through, you know, a few injuries and everything else. At this point, getting into his mid to late 20s and he's had some procedures and now he's big and strong and old and presumably maybe more durable than he was when he was younger, when you saw 101, 102 on the gun, did you flinch at all? Did it concern you in the least?
No, because I know that he was capable of doing that. The fact is he maintained those velocities. I mean, it would sink to 99, but it would get back up to 101 in a hurry. He hit 102 one time. He's not going to be able to pitch at 102, but if he can throw 98 or above and show the life on the fastball that he had, and that's really the key, because it surprises you how many guys actually can get to triple digits in the major leagues. But then when you watch the ball itself, you realize that it might be 101, but it's dead straight. And normally if it's dead straight, these guys will catch up to it, especially if they have a chance to see it a few times. But if it has some late life, that's what you're looking for. And that's what Michael had that night in Cleveland, the late life where guys just couldn't catch up to it. And he was just overwhelming. So, yeah, that's one of the bright spots.
You know, Steve, I love it. I get excited at the velocity, but the backstory and the feelings underneath are this insatiable lust for velocity around baseball that is, frankly, seeming to be the biggest factor that has destroyed the ulnar collateral ligaments of all these guys. I mean, I know there's spin. There's also the specialization. There's the fact that perhaps the UCL doesn't fully develop until age 26. Like, all of these things factor in. But it's just, the numbers are there. The guys who throw the hardest over recent seasons are the ones who are most often getting hurt. So I don't know if that toothpaste ever goes back into the tube in baseball, will it?
Well, if you take a look at the development process of the Cleveland Guardians, you'll realize that what they do has the ability to sustain itself, because what they take is, they take pitchers, they're not overwhelmingly big. They're not, you know, 6'7", 6'8". Not saying there's anything wrong with that, because occasionally you get a 6'6 guy like Chris Sale who hangs around for a while and has some wonderful years. But for the most part, the Guardians pick guys anywhere from 6'1 to 6'3". They have fastballs 92, 93. They might get them an extra mile an hour or so. But what they do is they teach their guys actually how to pitch. Seeing as the avocation is called pitching, it's not called throwing. My feeling is if you pitch, then you're going to be in pretty good shape to sustain it. And you ask any hitter, their eyes are like computers. A hitter can see 98, and he knows exactly what it takes at 98 miles an hour to get his hands to the point where just out in front you make contact. You hit the ball pretty hard, and if it stays at 98 and a pitcher misses his location, then he's going to get hit awfully hard. The question is, are you better served putting a little something on that fastball or taking something off? And the question has the answer has always been and will always be, you're better off taking something off. Because if you can see, let's say a pitcher just has 95, and I say just because that's kind of what we're looking at these days. Let's say he has 95. And a hitter knows 95, he knows exactly where the hands have to be, and he can also move his leg but keep his hands back and still hit that, especially if it's off speed. But if you're changing speeds consistently on that fastball, and a guy has 95 and a hitter knows you have 95, and now you see 91 and sinking down and in, you see why the two-seam fastball has made a resurgence in baseball. Because Driveline taught the four-seam fastball, throw everything as hard as you can, spend five innings out there, and somebody's going to come in. The question is, when you do that over a fairly prolonged period of time, will your arm hold up? We have found conclusively the answer is no. And when you read the article and the fact that you mentioned 26 when that ligament matures,
yeah,
that's the article that Andrews of Birmingham, Alabama, wrote and contributed to, and he talked about the fact that it used to be major league guys getting the majority of the Tommy Johns, and now it has switched. It's young guys who their arms have not developed yet, and they're throwing big spin sliders and curveballs and fastballs as hard as they can, and eventually it gives way, and that's where he's doing the majority of his Tommy Johns. If you have that, well, then obviously you're going to come back with all the velocity you had before, but eventually, if you continue those high spin rates and those high velocities, especially on sliders with depth, you're going to wind up getting hurt. That's just the way it's been. That's probably the way it always will be. And I prefer a guy who can pitch as opposed to a guy who can throw, and I think they'll last longer.
One more thing on this stuff. I saw this the other day. Of the last 14 Cy Young Award winners in both leagues, okay, 28 different awards, how many of them are currently active and pitching in MLB? The answer is two. It's Corbin Burns and Blake Snell. That's it. Everybody else is either retired or hurt or on their way back or unsigned, like Zach Greinke. Well,
Blake Snell might have the whole idea of this down pat, which is, you know, never see the eighth inning. You're a starting pitcher who never sees the eighth inning, but you won two Cy Young Awards. You got paid a great deal of money to be there, and he stays healthy, takes the ball, only he never goes deep into games because his control is not particularly good, and he winds up just leaving because he's out of gas. And apparently that's the era we're heading into. But I prefer, in trying to save your bullpen, which is the key to all this, because I've talked to great major league managers, they tell me the same thing. The best pitching staff, the best bullpen doesn't win when it comes late season and you need to put together a winning streak. He told me that the healthiest bullpen wins. And what separates the men from the boys, as far as a manager is concerned, is a guy that can keep that pitching staff healthy as he gets to the meaningful games in the middle of August down through September. Keeping that healthy is the key. And to do that, you have to make sure that you don't overuse guys. It is an art to manage and to manipulate your bullpen. Some guys do it better than others, but the guys who do it real well are usually the guys who are there in September.
Well, let's wish good health for Garrett Crochet, as hard as he throws and as enjoyable as he has been. Steve, have a great weekend. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Okay, guys, have a good show, and I'll talk to you down the road.
That's Steve Stone of the Chicago White Sox. Isn't that crazy? Two guys That's from wild. The last 14 years of Cy Young on both the American League and National League side are currently active in pitching. That's it.
Just I mean, crazy. Think about the way that in youth baseball and just, you know, teenagers in general became kind of the in vogue thing to just start having those UCL procedures early, just almost kind of forcing guys
to
get them right off the bat.
Look, Anthony, stop. Okay, we got a break. Shane's been asking, and your discipline is an issue.
I don't look at Shane.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's my fault. 670, the score is where you are. It's Parkins and Spiegel. It's time for polls position. Hardcore football analyses. Let's get into the brain of Anthony Heron next on 670 The Score.
Mullen Haw, Chicago's number one most listened to sports morning show. 5:30 till 10 a.m.
John is in Joliet. Hey, John, how are you, bud?
Hey, good morning, guys. If I've never said this before, I'm going to say it now. Thank you both, because I start work at 5:30 in the morning, fire up the semi, take a sip of coffee, and you guys are always there to entertain me throughout my morning. So, Thank you, John.
Thanks, John.
Mullen Haw, mornings 5:30 till 10 a.m. on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
This segment is brought to you by Metra. The average annual commuting cost in Chicago is over $4,000. Parking, gas, maintenance, it all adds up. By taking Metra, you could get that $4,000 back while communicating quickly and comfortably. What would you do with all that extra money? Metra lets you drive less and do more.